Support for the Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative. It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm David Gustina, joined this week by John Caney. He is the executive director and co-founder of Reinvent Albany. He's been on the show before. Reinvent Albany is a nonprofit, nonpartisan, tax-exempt charitable organization that promotes open, accountable New York State government with an interest in government transparency and public participation. That's quite a thing to chew on, and I'm sure we will. Welcome back to the Capital Connection, John Caney.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Now, we obviously are in a budget negotiation situation right now, the budget over a week late, but the issue is the negotiations themselves, isn't it? And transparency all these years, and we're still at three people in a room, basically.
Yeah, I think that the big problem from a transparency perspective is that the real discussion and voting is when the legislative leaders present their agreements, negotiated agreements, to their own caucuses. And that's when you have the candid discussions. And the Schoolhouse Rock version is that that discussion occurs in public on the floor of the legislature, like you can see on in Congress. Often there's that debate, but that's not how it really works. That it's less the three person in a room issue, which is just a built-in feature of negotiating in all political systems everywhere. And New York's not really bad in that way. It's that the discussion and the back and forth is all private. And so when the Senate and the Assembly come to their chambers, the decisions have been made and there's not real discussion. There's just a vote and it's bang. So the public does not get to hear the debate and on the budget. And in fact, there's less public debate on the budget on the floors than there are on kind of everyday unexciting bills during which you have members get to rise and opine on things. So it is very secretive, the entire process, and it's filled with leaks and all kinds of strategic leakery that goes on when special interest groups have members of the legislature leak parts of the agreements to them, and then they give those to reporters. And it's basically a undemocratic and opaque process.
Yeah, I think that you and I would agree fundamentally on that issue when it comes to transparency. But nonetheless, why would lawmakers vote to make things more transparent, which could hoist them on their own petard, so to speak? But yet there are some bills that are moving through the legislature, at least three that I see that you're supporting that would help create open government. I guess it remains to be seen whether they'll make it all the way through.
Yeah, I mean, let me just start with a modest proposal. I mean, Reinvent Albany would actually support four-year terms for the legislature, and so that they're not always in election mode all the time, and they're not always having to raise money every second for their end. We think that that would help them be a bit more deliberative and feel less under the gun from special interest groups and lobbyists. And so that's nowhere near happening. And, you know, that is a modest proposal. But in return for that four-year terms, we would ask the legislature to open up the process and the governor to open up the process more as and, you know, Congress is more open than the New York State legislature in that way. One of the big problems also, I should just point out, is that the budget has kind of the budget process has become the monster that eats everything. And you've got basically a major league and a minor league process in Albany where the budget is the major league and it's the big policy proposals that are discussed, debated, fought over. And then you have the, and that's the major league session, the budget. And then you have the what's called the regular legislative session, or and what we call the minor league or the JV session. And that's a big problem, because what happens is that the governor's power just grows and grows in New York as more and more of the state's business is decided during that budget session, which the governor has maximum power in. And without getting too far astray, that's because of some state highest court of appeals decisions in the early 90s, Pataki versus Silver and Silver versus Pataki, where the state's highest court decided that the governor could indeed put policy into the budget and the legislature can't strip it out. And so that's one. So over time, that's helped create this major league and minor league process. And one part of the state budget being late that is that the legislative session, that minor league session, get shorter and shorter and shorter. And that's a problem, because that's where the legislature has real latitude to make policy and to do things. So the system is out of whack, and it's certainly not what the state constitution envisioned. And that matters, because bills like the ones you talked about that strengthen freedom of information law and do other things to make state government more transparent, those happen during the minor league session. And we won't even see them for a while. So hope springs eternal, but we have a system right now where we really have an imperial governor system in New York. And on top of that, governors get to do what are called chapter amendments, where they get to actually rewrite bills passed by the legislature, completely rewrite them, and send them back to the legislature for agreement. This is called chaptering. And that's usually the only way in this era that governors agree to sign bills. So most bills are chaptered and can say very, very different things than what the legislature debated on the floor and passed in front of the public. So to pass these open government bills or these reform bills is very, very hard, because not only do they have to get through the Senate and the Assembly and then the governor sign off on them, but the governor then has this chance to renegotiate the whole bill during this chaptering process. And again, this all happens during the minor league session, and the really big time things that are holding up the state budget right now are decided in that major league budget session. So there's a reason that Albany is very, very dissatisfying to reformers and editorial boards and people who want more transparency and a more public-minded process. And there's unfortunately no sign that Governor Hochul or that the legislative leaders really want to change things in a serious way.
No, there isn't. And let me just add that as a person who has been in public media for over 30 years, most of the public isn't paying attention at all. So they don't even divide, as you say. They see the public process going on through their televisions and radio and newspapers and however they're getting their information. Fewer and fewer of them are. And then they're only getting a slice of it. You're sort of peeling back some of the layers here for us to look at. Now, let's take a current example. Right now, Carl Hastie, a little bit upset in negotiations with Governor Hochul. Just as you said, the governor has a lot of power, so she can throw in a poison pill, my words, to say, hey, you know, if you want to get paid legislators, you have to follow what I want in the budget.
Yeah, look, the law currently says that the legislature doesn't get paid until the budget's adopted. And the idea behind that when it passed was that it didn't make sense for legislators to get paid while government employees were not getting paid. And okay, good, sound thinking, but government employees in New York are getting paid right now because the legislature and governor are passing extenders, which basically say, we're gonna keep paying the bills at the same level that we have been paying from the previous budget. A much more sensible approach would be to say that the legislature gets paid as long as, you know, when government employees get paid, the legislature also gets paid. So you don't have this artificial gun at their head that the governor can use to pressure the legislature. That would be the reform. And what Speaker Hastie proposed is not going to pass and is way too complicated, but it's just a sign of dissatisfaction. But really, the legislature and the governor should pass a new law that says when government workers are paid, the legislature gets paid. Fair is fair here. But it shows you the level of dissatisfaction that the speaker has with the governor right now, because the governor keeps sticking more and more big policy items into even this late budget negotiation.
We're speaking with John Caney, executive director and co-founder of Reinvent Albany, looking to promote open, accountable New York State government. And you are listening to The Capital Connection. I am David Gustina. You mentioned, John, that one of your ideas is full four-year terms to cut down on the constant running for re-election, you know, the need to raise that money that so many legislators complain about but seem to be doing 24/7. But what about making them full-time? In other words, we see a lot of these legislators, because they're considered part-time, they're lawyers on the side, or they do other things, business people, others, all sorts of professions, runs the gamut. But a lot of them are lawyers, and a lot of times, you know, they're using their tour of public service to help their business afterwards. And it sometimes muddies the waters when it comes to negotiating with legislators. I wonder how you feel about that.
Yeah. So, Dave, I think you raised two points. One is outside income, which has been sharply curtailed. That is limits on how much legislators can make from another job while they're serving as legislators. So the New York State Legislature is the highest paid in the United States. And by the way, I think that's something we should be proud of. I mean, these are people that are deciding a $255 billion budget that directly affects the everyday lives of almost every New Yorker. So they have a lot of responsibility, and, you know, they don't get paid absurd amounts. They get paid over $140,000 a year, but that's not crazy by any standard. It's less than a police sergeant in New York City makes. Why shouldn't these folks get paid? We think that they should be, but in return, they should not be bringing in very much an outside income because of that conflict of interest. So right now, the outside income law, which groups like ours fought very hard for, is being challenged by some Republican legislators who want to keep their outside income. And it's in the courts, and it's probably going to take a year or more to go through the courts. Then the other issue you mentioned was legislative career employment. And there's not a whole lot that can be done to restrict that other than restricting appearances before entities that legislator might have had doing business with. But legislators have a First Amendment right to speak, to live their lives, to associate who they want to. And, you know, there'll always be a pay-to-play opportunity and cashing in on your relationships from when you were a legislator or a governor, I should point out, since we have a ex-governor who made a very large amount of money from political relationships he had as governor. So that's not something we can do much about, but it's certainly a pay-to-play risk.
And it may be one of the reasons why so many people throw their hands up at politics, right, John? I mean, legalized bribery, right? I mean, if the people with the most money can lay it in your campaign, you know, you can say it's not tit for tat, you know, it's not, quote, technically a bribe, but it certainly feels a lot like that, doesn't it?
Oh, you know, here I will point my finger at the United States Supreme Court for two disastrous Supreme Court decisions, one in 2014, Citizens United, where the court said that money is speech in politics and destroyed the 30-year-old McCain-Feingold campaign reforms at the national level, and then destroyed local campaign finance laws all over the country and opened the door for unlimited spending through independent expenditures and really, really let loose this tidal wave of cash into the American political system, which is, I think, destroying democracy in this country. And then they followed that up in 2016 with another terrible decision, McDonnell decision, which basically legalized bribery and
so-called theft of honest services law, right?
That's right. The Supreme Court redefined what bribery is, and thus saved at that time Mayor de Blasio was 1 week away from being indicted for bribery under the previous definition of bribery. And he skated because the Supreme Court just happened to issue a decision. It was a remarkable thing. So those two decisions by the Supreme Court have deeply, deeply undermined public confidence in government and democracy, and have certainly had a terrible effect. And you can see it with the humongous explosion in lobbying in Albany, where expenses have just gone through the roof, or spending on lobbying. And I would connect that to the unreality of this year's Albany budget. We, Reinvent Albany, issued a statement when the governor and legislators' preliminary budgets came out and were proposed budgets that said that it was a consensual delusion. And we said that because this year, 2025, the state of New York is actually running a budget surplus of about $3 billion. By all accounts, the federal government is, under the Trump administration and GOP Congress majority, is going to undertake cuts to programs that are crucial to New York, especially Medicaid. But really across the board, in Trump's first budget is October 1st. And those cuts could absolutely hammer New York to the tune of $5 to $15 billion in reduced federal aid, maybe even more. New York gets about $91 billion in federal aid currently. And New York's entire what we call political economy, that is the way that government intermeshes with jobs and employment, is really based on Medicaid.
Yep.
And some decades ago, there was a pretty smart policy decision or strategic decision made in New York that New York would try to cash in on Medicaid. And for every dollar New York puts in, New York gets another matching dollar from the federal government. So this is 100% return on investment, pretty damn good. And so what New York has done is created the biggest Medicaid program in the United States by far. And that's deliberate. That's an employment investment. That's economic development from New York's perspective, though New York doesn't call it that. And the federal government is going after Medicaid in a big way. And, you know, New York's getting roughly, I think, $50 billion in Medicaid matching reimbursements from the federal government right now. And you could see that a 10% cut, $5 billion, 20%, $10 billion, that just cuts from Medicaid could be devastating. So how do I connect the dots on that? Right now in Albany, if you walk around in the halls, the lobbyists for different Medicaid interests are screaming for additional funds. Well, Medicaid is the fastest growing part of New York's budget by far. And the fastest growing part of the fastest growing part is the consumer-directed home attendant program, which allows people to employ disabled people or infirm people to employ their family members and get them paid as caregivers. And it's super popular. But right now, that program is exploding in popularity, and it's going to get hit by the federal cuts.
This is the CDPAP program that we've been hearing
CDPAP,
about.
Yep, or CDPAS, depending on who you are. And that program's going to get massively hit. So right now in Albany, as I've walked down the halls and seen, there's advocates for those home workers, you know, usually children or grandchildren of older people who are infirm, advocating for better health coverage for those folks. And that's just hard to square with massive, massive cuts coming. As is, are things like the governor giving back $3 billion in a middle class, you know, inflation rebate, as she called it. So New York right now is proposing, the governor proposed an 11% increase in spending over last year, the legislature 14%. New York, in reality, next year is probably going to get hit with $10 to $20 billion in cuts in federal aid, is running a small surplus this year. So when you're asked the basic budget question, you know, knowing that these terrible cuts are coming, do you A, increase spending by a lot, or B, try to keep things the same and save as much as you can and be strategic? In Albany, they've chosen A, and which is increase spending by a lot. And the reason they've done that is twofold, but it's mainly so that Albany, that is the governor, the Senate, and the Assembly, can blame Trump for the pain that New Yorkers are going to feel next year, instead of tightening belts now so that the federal cuts are less damaging. because the logic, political logic here is, why take the hit? Why have those lobbyists beat the crap out of us with really hateful television ads and social media advertising saying that, you know, we put grandma on the corner, which is a real campaign that was run against Elliot Spitzer some time ago, literally showing an old lady in a wheelchair under with snow falling on her on a corner by herself, which really hurt Spitzer's popularity back in the day. And they don't want that, our state legislators or our governor. So they're actually doing extremely irresponsible, incredibly irresponsible budgeting that's going to make the pain a lot worse when the Trump cuts come through sometime next year. But they don't want to take the political hit for that. Let Trump take the hit for that. So it's smart politics and terrible governance. And that's why the budget right now just does not make sense to anyone who is a policy or fiscal analyst or anyone that pays attention to this stuff other than as an exercise in politics. And again, that goes back to the four-year term, the two-year term, and the pressure they feel from the special interest lobbyists in Albany.
John Caney of Reinvent Albany with us on the Capital Connection this week. I'm David Gustina. Well, and I can't for the life of me see a path where they don't have to come back in a special session. I was talking with Jimmy Vielkind of WNYC, the reporter there. He agreed, you know, the idea that we have this federal money cuts that are coming that they're not dealing with. At some point, the rubber hits the road. You got to come and deal with it. And then the question is, what do they do since they've upped the spending? You know, you've got a rainy day fund sitting there as well. I mean, how does this all get managed? Do you see them coming back for a special session to deal with this at some point?
Yes. Why September, which is what they've been mentioning the most in Albany and the Capitol, why that's logical, I don't totally understand, because the federal budget actually goes from October 1st to October 1st, basically, and the state budget supposed to go from April 1. So September, as you notice, is before the federal budget is adopted. And this federal budget is going to be crazy because Trump is throwing bombs and they're proposing potentially massive cuts, which are going to hurt Republican districts as well as Democratic districts. So one would think that it will be negotiated down to the absolute wire. Therefore, New York's not going to know really the state of things until October. So I don't know why they're coming back in September before they know what's in the federal budget or what's voted on there. But yes, there'll be a special session. There was a special session of this kind back in, I think it was 2009, 2010, when then Governor Patterson had to call it because of big cuts to Medicaid at that time. And we really haven't seen this kind of special session necessary since then. But I would throw in a couple things. One of the things our group's concerned with is corporate subsidies. And we think they're an incredibly bad investment of taxpayer money, as the evidence suggests. And the state of New York is increasing direct subsidies to corporations by $4.4 billion in this current budget. And the legislature has already agreed to that. So that's not even a controversial issue. But to us, that gives you an idea of the unreality of things, because the Trump administration is actively withholding funding from, for instance, the opiate and addiction programs. And just last week, the State Office of Mental Health and Addiction announced that $300 million in grants that addiction providers were expecting to get are not coming through. And that's a ton of money. So the dissonance for us, no, you know, we don't work on opioid addiction issues, et cetera, but it's a little hard to understand how the state of New York can be increasing direct cash subsidies to, for instance, Hollywood producers to $800 million a year at the same time as these programs like addiction services are being eliminated completely. And so that goes back to the power of lobbyists, and not just lobbyists, but special interest groups and the flow of cash, and the fact that Hollywood producers are huge donors, especially the Democratic Party, and so are the various trade unions that work on film and TV production. And that's it. So that, unfortunately, is how Albany works, where the public interest is lost in the sauce because you have enormously politically powerful special interests that are able to warp spending to benefit themselves.
Yeah, it's perplexing that those that have the least often get hurt the most. And we're seeing this again. If you are listening and reading between the lines of what John Caney is saying on this week's Capital Connection, you know, and by design. Now, what if Reinvent Albany had millions and millions and millions of dollars and go up and lobby those legislators to make government open? Would that money matter?
It would certainly matter to some degree if we created an independent expenditure in a super PAC and started spending hundreds of millions of dollars for candidates that we supported against those that, and, you know, did what special interest groups do, which is carrots and sticks. And yeah, anyone with big enough bags of money can terrorize the legislature or reward legislators that do what they want, for sure. So, and again, because independent expenditures cannot be capped, that, yeah, the potential to do that, if there was some, you know, billionaire who wanted to go out and spend infinity money, they could definitely affect things. But it's also part of buying a story and creating a story. And that's what the legislature and the governor really want, is they want to be seen as doing something to energize the economy and create jobs. And so it's both the money and the chance to stand in a union hall with a big American flag behind you and have the theatrical teamsters cheer you or whomever, both things. But yeah, sure. Of course, we're a nonprofit and we don't have an independent expenditure super PAC connected to us. But if somebody wants to start one that supports what we do, then, you know, well, let's talk.
That's it. We're out of time. He is John Caney, Executive Director of Reinvent Albany. You can find out more at reinventalbany.org. John, thanks again for joining us.
Thank you.
Support for the Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative.